Blog Talk Radio.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
The issue didn't come up during the presidential debate at all, thanks to the president, but Vice President Biden didn't shy away from it tonight. He went right to the question, what do we think when Romney was caught talking to the rich people about the not rich people?
But it shouldn't be surprising for a guy who says 47% of the American people are unwilling to take responsibility for their own lives. My friend recently in a speech in Washington said 30% of the American people are takers. These people are my mom and dad, the people I grew up with, my neighbors. They pay more effective tax than Governor Romney pays in his federal income tax. They are elderly people who, in fact, are living off of Social Security. They are veterans and people fighting in Afghanistan right now who are, quote, not paying any taxes. I've had it up to here with this notion that 47%, it's about time they take some responsibility here. And instead of signing pledges to Grover Norquist not to ask the wealthiest among us to contribute to bring back the middle class, they should be signing a pledge saying to the middle class, we're going to level the playing field.
Now, Thomas, what are you telling me? You can't hear me?
I can't hear you in my ear. I can hear you at the table right now.
I hear you in my ear.
Well, ain't that just weird?
That is. That's really, 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 really weird. Let me see. 1, 2, 3. Well, I can see me.
But that's fine. I just won't have to have your voice in my ear.
Oh, I see your voice. It's going across the airwaves.
And here we are.
And you can't hear me.
Oh, I can't hear you.
Maybe I just need to turn you up just a little. Maybe. How's that? How's that? Is that even better? No? How about that? Is that even better?
Well,
you don't know, man. You don't know.
So we've got to talk about this debate.
Yes, yes.
This incredible showdown last night. Did we not have a showdown worth having?
Oh, absolutely.
Did we make up some ground from the other day when we had to hear people whine that Obama didn't quite hit it out of the park?
Well, hey, this ain't baseball. This is not baseball.
Well, you know, these debates, people don't realize they actually kind of have a good cop, bad cop rhythm to them. And
well,
the president is supposed to be the
good cop.
The good cop, the aloof one, the one that just stands back, lets everybody else bicker, banter, and whine and cry and lie, and he's supposed to be above all that. But I have to tell you, I enjoyed Biden coming out with if you want to use a baseball analogy, and swinging a bat last night, because he did a good job.
Well,
his prop.
Well, listen, there are several things that we need to talk about, but
mm-hmm.
What about the vice president? He's fed up with those people. I'm telling you, I don't blame him. I'm fed up with him, too. They lie, they lie, they lie, they lie, and they lie again. And the problem is that if you haven't listened to them, and that's what they're banking on, they're banking on people who have not listened to them for the last 2 years, where they told all this outrageous stuff that they were going to do. They were going to do ultra-evasive maneuvers on women's vaginas. They were going to take pictures of them and shove them in your face. And one said, oh, no, well, you don't have to look at them. You can have your eyes closed, but we're going to do it anyway. I mean, they went across the nation. They tried to throw every single of these 33 states that they took over as the regressive party as governors and try to pass ID voter laws, which have been turned down by every single one of the Republican judiciaries that are in power over those areas of the country. Every one of them has said, hell no, you can't do this. I mean, what don't they understand?
Well, they don't care.
They don't care.
It's their way. That's all they want.
Or the highway.
Like,
but it's not even the highway
the
because they don't want to pay for the highway.
Yeah. It's the rutted path through the woods. Look,
so
these are the same type of people who show up year after year at your local PTA meeting and say, why are you teaching science to my child? You know?
Yeah. You mean science by
the same people.
When the apple fell off the tree, it falls down and hits you in the head
because of
gravity?
Yeah, no, just because a snake knocked it down. But these people don't care. They don't. It doesn't matter how many times, how many decades, how many centuries worth of loss you have to have. They'll keep trying the same thing. You know that. Let's see. What did they say about the insanity? Repeat the same thing over and
over. Repeat the same thing over and over.
And that's what we have. We have people who are just obsessed with an idea. They want it to be, no matter what. But you're right about them counting on people not paying attention.
Absolutely.
And that's why they exactly have their official presidential policy was what? Etch-a-sketch. Because they're perfectly happy with the fact that and unfortunately, it's true, the public sometimes doesn't pay attention, and they can get away with saying or doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good thing, but it happens to be where we are. But these guys think that they can just say, do anything, and next Monday, you don't know what's going on. You're busy. You've got bills. You had to work late that weekend. You probably missed half the football game, and your food burned. Did you notice that he lied? What's it matter?
Well, the problem is, though, especially when you don't watch him back to back to back, because the minister.
Yeah, because they are the only people that have back.
As a matter of fact, we have a sort of a little montage.
Is that a malarkey montage?
Well, yeah, of the minister. Let's play a little here.
just seems to be saying the first thing that pops into his head.
Creating more jobs. So he seems to be bouncing around. The devil's in the details. The angel is in the policy.
Romney is losing it.
The Romney campaign is really struggling.
What's he going to offer up?
What's your big idea?
Freedom.
Where is the core mix?
Are you willing to expose yourself?
I think this is an election about a choice. This is a campaign about a choice.
He seems to only have one note.
No, not Mitt Romney.
Tax cuts for the wealthy.
That's essentially it.
That is not a strategy to win. That is a strategy to lose.
I pay all the taxes that are legally required and not a dollar more.
The campaign released his 2011 tax documents. The taxes that came out on Friday, on Friday afternoon, take out the trash day.
I pay all the taxes that are legally required and not a dollar more.
Romney actually paid more than he needed to.
He's the biggest shapeshifter outside of Harry Potter.
They are clearly worried.
We're going to win. There's no question in my mind.
Romney's not going to be president. I think everybody knows that.
Well, if we don't run Chris Christie, Romney will be the nominee and we'll win.
Planned Parenthood, we're going to get rid of that.
Now, if you did not hear every one of the mister's statements, and that's, hey, that's only a little bit what we played. And we're talking about back in, I believe it was 84, 88, when he ran against Kennedy. Ted Kennedy said that, you know, if you wait around, he's like the wind. He'll have a new position. He's multi-position? I mean, this man belongs in Ringling Brothers. He has so many positions he can tie his body up into. I mean, it's just completely outrageous. And then, oh, let's listen to something about the health care.
It's like when he said he supported the Blunt Amendment, then he said he didn't understand what he was talking
Blunt.
About.
He don't even know Blunt. Hold on. Let's just see.
Should health insurance cover birth control?
Health insurers can now. Health insurers have, it's a question as to should you get a car painted, you know, red or blue? I mean, you can decide which you'd like. People who want to have contraceptive health insurance can choose that in their policy.
Here's another one.
No. Do I believe the Supreme Court should overturn Roe v. Wade? Yes, I do.
Clear, right?
No.
Do I believe the Supreme Court should overturn Roe v. Wade? Yes. I do.
Clear, right?
Would you have supported the constitutional amendment that would have established the definition of life at conception?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Now, this is the man who ran in Massachusetts who said he is strongly for a person's right to choose.
Right.
He wouldn't have got elected governor if he was against for a constitutional amendment for life at conception.
Yep.
He now said a couple of weeks ago that I am extreme. I would sign this. I'd be delighted to sign a abortion bill. Now here's.
I would welcome a circumstance where there was such a consensus in this country that we said we don't want to have abortion in this country at all, period. That'd be wonderful. I'd be delighted.
Would you sign that bill?
Let me say it. I'd be delighted to sign that bill.
Now, here is different situations where he has said that he would be delighted to sign the bill.
Right. Well, he made that pledge. Got it right here. June 18, 2011. He wrote it himself, that he pledged to do away with abortion, pledged to reverse Roe v. Wade, wanted to overturn all laws, and do away with everything that the liberals, and he said the federal judges legislating from the bench had caused. And he was going to support the Hyde Amendment, reinstate the Mexico City policy, eliminate all international funding for abortions, tie it to everything with American policy. And then he turns around at the same breath and goes, I stand, you know.
Here's something that supports that here.
They attack 47% of Americans who pay no income tax, including veterans, elderly, the disabled.
Not to worry about those people.
Doesn't the president have to worry about everyone? Mitt Romney paid just 14.1% in taxes last year. He keeps millions in Bermuda and the Cayman Islands. He won't release his tax returns before 2010. Maybe instead of attacking others on taxes, Romney should come clean on his.
Well, here's the thing. Mitt Romney is now tacking towards the center. He denies this.
Right.
He just said in the last debate, his health care plan has provisions in it for a child being 26 years old and for health care of the elderly, health care for all children. But he didn't say that that only follows suit if you have had previous insurance before.
Right.
That means if you've never had insurance, you can't get this insurance. You have to go to the emergency room. Now, is it the fact why the Affordable Care Act was passed, Obamacare, to you people in Parksland, yes, or in Alcatraz? The reason why we passed Obamacare is because that it costs four or five times or six times more for health insurance if you go to the emergency room.
Right.
And who is paying for that? You know, I don't know why that question is never asked of the people who are being interviewed by these commentators. Who pays for the insurance? Who pays for the emergency room when someone who doesn't have insurance goes to the emergency room? Who pays for it? You and me. And everybody else that has insurance pays for it. That's why our insurance is over the deep end, because we're paying for, was it, at least 43 million people who don't have health insurance.
Right.
And the insurance companies can screw us because there is no telling what that's going to cost, so they arbitrarily inflate your insurance. Now, what the Affordable Care Act does do, and again, you people in Alcatraz or the border areas in Arizona, I mean, borders of your own mind, because that includes Sharon Angle and that includes who's the governor down there, that nitwit, who don't understand it.
I don't know. I thought they all lived in tent cities with Sheriff Arpaio.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
Sorry.
Since the Affordable Care Act has passed in August, well, let me back up a little bit. The Affordable Care Act, one of its many provisions is that you no longer have to pay for a condition that you've had before you got insurance. You no longer have to pay for your child that's 26 years of age that can go under your insurance. You no longer have to pay for preventative care. That means all you guys out there that have think that you might have a problem, you can get it checked out now, colonoscopy for nothing.
Yeah, all your well visits.
Well visits for nothing. Oh, see, yeah, but see, that's costing us. No, it's not costing you any more money because they were charging you so much money, they could have given you three colonoscopies a year for the amount of money they were charging you.
Well, also, people forget, you go now, the whole point of preventative care. You go now before something gets bad.
Yeah.
You wait till you show up at the hospital. Guess what? You're in major, major trouble.
Right.
And you just cost everybody $100,000.
Absolutely. I mean, they said, well, you know, I'll get to that. We had something else that crossed my mind, but I don't want to confuse everybody right now because I'm confused myself. But anyway, the thing is that one of the other provisions is that the insurance companies, ladies and gentlemen, if you're home listening to this,
do me a flavor, please. Go find your insurance policy. See what it says. Because what it says is that, speak to him who's calling, ask him what he wants. Anyway, tell him 4:15. We have a guest calling in. He needs to call back in at 4:15. But anyway, what I was saying is that you need to go look at your insurance policy. One of the things on your insurance policy, your premium says X amount of dollars. Says X amount of dollars. One of the things on the X amount of dollars is that the insurance company, now has to pay. The insurance company now has to pay you back the difference if they don't use all your premiums on you. They are told now by the government that they have to spend up to 80% of your premium payments for your care. No longer 25% of your premiums on your care. No longer 35% on your care. They now have to spend 80% of your premium that you pay once a month individually or in a group plan or however you pay for it on you.
You mean your money for you?
That's
what?
Correct. They weren't doing that before. They were spending 25% maybe on you, and then giving a 45% bonus to the CEO.
Yeah, there's no you in yacht. I'm just saying.
No, that there's no you. That's correct. So the yacht has to be smaller.
Oh.
See, now you say, well, this is. A capitalist society. We should be able to. Yes, you can. That's absolutely correct. If you are an insurance company, yes, you can charge whatever you want. Don't listen to the government. But then you won't have the people who are buying your insurance.
Yeah, what's that called?
Because they will go to someone else.
Customers. Something like customer satisfaction.
That's right.
You know, you can, if you want, pay $10, $12, $30 for a stale burger from,
absolutely,
you know, McBurger
place. That's
customer
service too.
Or you can pay what it's worth.
That's right. And now you say, well, this is how we made it in this country. No, it isn't. That's not how we made it in this country. I mean, hey, you want to talk about how we made it in this country? Hey, JFK's grandparents were in the bootlegging business. I mean, if you want to say that's how he made it in this country, yeah. Doesn't mean that it was right. I mean, you can charge whatever you want, but why should I have to pay an inflated cost with everybody? Because this is a monopoly now. They did this to the if you people that are old enough to know about the fixing of the milk prices back in the late 50s, early 60s, remember that? They fixed the price of milk at a certain price. All the dairies were charging the same price. And what did they do? They instituted, I don't know if it was Taft Hartley or one of the injunctions, President Eisenhower, Republican president, said they were charged with fixing the milk prices. They lied. They came to a Senate investigation. They all said no. The government proved that they were lying. They were fined a lot. And they were deregulated. I mean, they were regulated. That they cannot do that anymore. You cannot collude to fix a price. This is what insurance companies have been doing to us. That's why we pay a higher insurance premium than any country in the world. And that's baloney when he says that we get the best service. No, only we have the most places to go. That does not mean we have the best service. We have the most places to go to see a doctor. That does not mean we have the best doctors.
And see, this is, again, what one of the problems I have with Republicans, with their constant mantra of, you know, government is the problem, and we don't need any of this socialism, blah, 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 blah. They completely misconstrue the point of government. Just like you said, the point of government at that point was to protect the people. So there are some companies illegally colluding to...
Not some, all of the milk companies.
Well, there was some companies illegally colluding to corner a market and, you know, make huge profits off ripping people off. So the government protected people. That's what laws are for. Same thing with the financial collapse after the banking scandal. We have protections now with the new laws that were passed. Well, here we have laws to protect people from insurance companies for medical benefits. So, again, it's a protection, not a dictatorial, you know, we're going to put a bureaucrat in a robe or standing in your robe next to the nurse.
Well, the thing is that, you know, they keep going back. These capitalistic morons keep, because they think they are morons if they think that we're going to go for this okie doke. This is nonsense. When you're a crook, you're a crook. When you're stealing from an individual, which they are doing, they are colluding. The insurance companies colluded together to fix what an insurance price costs, and they now have been slapped in the face and head and shoulders like Joe Biden did to Eddie Munster last night. That's what he did. He said, Eddie, you might be a werewolf in training, but you're not a werewolf yet. Go back. Okay,
sometimes malarkey.
Reverend Sharpton said, if I have this clip here, I just want to play what Reverend Al said about this was, I thought, was very funny, and I don't look like we have it here. We don't have it, but anyway, Reverend Sharpton says, you know, last night that. About Romney being a liar. He said, you know, paraphrasing, he said that Eddie Munster was only a liar in training.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't grown up to a full-scale liar yet. And the problem is that we need to make sure that we are able to understand, we got to call it. Hold on 1 minute.
It's Dr. Gaffney.
Hello there. Yeah, I'm on the air.
So one of the problems we have here is that
you have
people who fundamentally misconstrue
the
role of government and why it's important.
Right.
A government is a – see, this is one of the other problems I have. Government is the by far the people. It says it right there at the opening line, we the people. And I get really, really tired of the Republicans who say the government is the enemy. Yeah, isn't there like a pogo? What are we talking about? We are the enemy? Listen, you can't.
And they is us.
The point of government is, just like for the national defense, we have an army, you know. Well, they are there to make our lives function, because we can't all go out every day and repave a road and relay the pipes to turn the water on and restring the wires to get electricity to our house and go, you know, every aspect of our life.
That's called infrastructure.
Yes.
Okay.
We have government, though, to guide and oversee the functioning of our lives in a safe and secure manner. But they somehow say that's wrong. We should have no oversight. We should throw all that out, you know. And, matter of fact, we shouldn't pay taxes. What fantasy world do they live in?
Well,
what are we even talking about?
You know, as I was saying about these the insurance companies, and I might have said this before, I probably did, but I'm going to repeat it because it's worth it. I pay my daughter's insurance. And I got a letter from her insurance company because, first of all, they were going up, and that's a long story, they were going up in price for the fourth time in 4 years. Got a letter stating for them that, and in the first two lines, it said, because of the Affordable Care Act, we now can bring you insurance at a cheaper cost. Now, what's all that about? Because of the Affordable Care Act, or you people from Alcatraz, Obamacare.
Yeah.
We now can give it to you at a cheaper price. Oh, so they're losing money now? I don't think so. Has anybody ever heard of an insurance company going bankrupt? Not that I heard of, unless the CEO was stealing. That's the only way it goes bankrupt.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure those massive buildings that they have their offices in are doing just fine.
Well, you know, and so now we talk about, well, as Eddie Munster said last night, you're penalizing the $250,000. You're penalizing the 97% of the people, small businesses, who make $250,000 or less. Well, the vice president slapped him in the nose again and says, like a good little werewolf, go over in the corner because you're lying. The majority of people who are small business make under $250,000, but what the regressive party includes in that sum are hedge fund people who make 7 and 8 figure salaries. $60 million, $6 million, $10 million. They include that because you're a small businessman. If you're one,
well,
I mean, we're talking about increasing the salary, increasing the taxes on 129,000 families. 129,000 that can afford it and are not asking for it. The only people that are asking for it is Mitt Romney.
Well, you know, Mike, if you would just understand these poor people,
mm-hmm.
they consider themselves small business because they are a business. You know, it's one man.
Monkey business.
One tax shelter in the Cayman Islands.
Oh, yes.
You know, sometimes it's like, you know, I don't know, Romney LLC or something. You know, who knows what he names it. But, see, that's a small business, right? It's just one man sheltering his money.
Well, let me play for you, all you regressiveites out there, about your hero, Mr. Ronald Reagan, what he said about it.
The Kipper.
And that's why this plan eliminates tax loopholes that primarily go to the wealthiest taxpayers and biggest corporations.
We're going to close the unproductive tax loopholes that have allowed some of the truly wealthy to avoid paying their fair share. In theory, some of those loopholes were understandable, but in practice, they sometimes made it possible for millionaires to pay nothing, while a bus driver was paying 10% of his salary, and that's crazy.
Middle-class families shouldn't pay higher taxes than millionaires and billionaires.
Do you think the millionaire ought to pay more in taxes than the bus driver, or less?
Warren Buffett's secretary shouldn't pay a higher tax rate than Warren Buffett.
So what do you think? I mean,
are you saying,
should he pay more?
I'm hearing...
This is the hero of the right. He said, you guys are paying nothing.
And he said it's wrong.
So what has changed between the time Ronald Reagan said that in 84 and today? You're still paying nothing. I mean, nothing has changed. You want to pay less than nothing now.
Yeah.
Because when Ronald Reagan was president, it was like 60% you were paying. I mean, come on. Well, no, I should. Wrong. It wasn't. It was 40%. He brought it down, to 25, and he said, this is ludicrous. And he put it back up to 40, over 40.
Because a little thing happened that nobody likes to talk about.
Yeah, a little thing.
The economy drove off a cliff while simultaneously impacting into the erupting volcano of the debt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's because that Ronald Reagan cut taxes, started Star Wars, and had us build up our military to 18 times it was before he gave an order.
Well, Mike, you
on never, a credit card.
Never, ever should underestimate the threat from Grenada.
That's correct, because, you know, they were very, very close from invading the United States.
I think they were very, very
Fort
close
Lauderdale,
to a beach.
Yes, it was the Fort Lauderdale.
Their own beach.
Their own
beach. They could see the beach from the other side of the island.
That's right. So here we are talking about what these morons are claiming, why they need their money. Now, we have a few issues here today.
A few?
A few.
Is this
a few?
There's like a phone book laying on my
desk. Phone?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, we need to talk about how dishonest Romney is with a boy.
Oh, please.
I mean,
this guy.
You know, now I was thinking about.
Can I be rude for a minute? Can I just say this was a guy who aborted his own view? I mean, what the hell? His own opinion? You know,
oh, many times.
This guy.
I mean, he's a serial abortionist when it comes to aborting his own views.
Look, just in his own pledge a while ago that I mentioned to you.
Yes.
His own pledge. He starts out, you know, I'm pro-life and I believe that abortion should be limited and blah, blah. He instantly, I support the reversal of Roe v. Wade because it's a bad law, bad medicine. Okay, where are you? Okay. That's what he always said. Right midway down, he's slamming it. We need to defund Planned Parenthood. We need to get rid of it. We need to resupport the Hyde Amendment. We need to reinstate our Mexico City policies law. You know, everything, just hacking.
Yeah, but
then, in this, now listen. In this, he's saying this was primarily the result of a small group of activist federal judges legislating from the bench. It was a misguided ruling that he will do everything in his power to overturn. This is his pledge. He just says, I will do everything. I will take every opportunity. I will commit myself to doing everything in my power to cultivate, promote, and support this culture of life and overturn Roe v. Wade. Okay? And then the same thing. He says, but I will only appoint judges who adhere to the Constitution and the laws as they're written. What?
As they're written. Oh, but he says after they change it.
Yeah.
As they're written.
And this is a guy who says, I'm going to do everything in my power to overturn this because it's a bad law I don't like. And then, but I will only appoint. What malarkey?
That's not what he said recently. He just said last week, there is no legislation with regards to abortion that I am familiar with that would become part of my agenda. He just said this during the debate.
Right.
He just said this. So, now, do we call this a lie? Do we call this a flip-flop? Is the man a serial liar? Or is he just believe reality is when he wakes up in the morning, and that is the new reality?
Now, here's the thing. This guy's pretty consistent. He's been like a very, you know, pro-life guy for ever since he got destroyed in Kennedyville, right? However, what he is an abject opportunist. And anytime he gets in front of a crowd that has 0.1% less of one of these evangelical nutbag teabagger people in it, then suddenly he's pro everything. You know, he's all happy to have windmills and, you know, no oil in this future with our sunny solar-powered abortion clinics, and everybody's happy, and he'll support you no matter what, and it's your choice. What? It's just he doesn't care. and he'll say anything to any crowd. The difference is now we have 24-hour TV, and we have the internet.
Absolutely.
So his words are catching up with him.
Well,
because used to he'd say it to, you know, the little mom and pop here and the little mom and pop in that town, and they didn't talk to each other.
Right. Well, it, the 2012 Republican platform added this line to its long-standing anti-abortion clause, saying that the party supports a human life amendment to the Constitution that gives the unborn child the same rights as everybody walking on two legs.
Now, this is that personhood amendment we've seen in state after state.
But wait a minute. He says there is no legislation with regards to abortion that I am familiar with that would become part of my agenda. So is he running in the Republican Party, or is he running in the Communist Party?
It's fantasy land. Again, this is a guy who consistently says he's going to defund everything in our nation that in any way supports abortion or can be used toward it or educate toward it or anything else. He also, you remember, the Republicans want to get rid of all sex ed in school. They want to get rid of anything that is, you know, might have a condom attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to block, as you stated, right here. He wanted to block all foreign aid anywhere to the UN, American direct aid, or any form of political aid to any nation anywhere that could be used in any way for women's health in ways he didn't like. He wanted to cut Planned Parenthood funding. They've tried that over and over this entire year. I mean, that's what the Republicans have been doing. They've been hacking at that in every federal budget, military budget, and every other budget they can find. They always make it some kind of, you know, paragraph 11 in the back of it. This is the guy who did all that. And then on top of it, the part that just blows my mind is he said he would appoint Supreme Court justices to overturn Roe v. Wade. And in the same breath, he only honors judges who abide by the laws as they're written and would not just love it. Well, you can't have it both ways. And that's exactly what you're
talking about. But I don't understand then. Why is he saying there's no legislation with regard to abortion that I'm familiar with to become part of my agenda? I mean,
well, that's the
who do you believe, me or your lying eyes? He's asking.
But that's his out. You missed it. I just realized.
Oh, I missed it. Right.
He's playing syntax games. That I'm familiar with. So he's not intimately familiar with them.
Yeah, but wait a minute, did he say?
Well, but maybe he's not intimately familiar with them. Maybe he hasn't read them fully. He just has an idea about them. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what the heck is wrong with this guy.
Wait a minute.
I would welcome a circumstance where there was such a consensus in this country that we said we don't want to have abortion in this country at all, period. That'd be wonderful. I'd be delighted.
Francis, would you sign that bill?
Let me say it. I'd be delighted to sign that bill.
To be delighted.
Here's another one.
But do I believe Supreme Court should overturn Roe v. Wade? Yes, I do.
Clear, right?
And another one.
Would you have support of the constitutional amendment that would have established the definition of life at conception?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, so is he saying that why he put Paul Ryan on his ticket had nothing to do with Paul Ryan and the nut job in Kansas City about forcible rape?
That had everything to do. Come on.
I mean,
he had to bolster his hardline credentials, so he had to have a guy who was a anti-abortion, anti-tax, anti-government, anti-Obama guy on there, because they don't think, they've always said this, that Romney is conservative enough. That's why during the debates during the last year running against his own people, he was running as hard as possible as a right-wing extremist, trying to counter their arguments that he's a liberal.
But he's
it's the both sides of the mouth argument. He just talks and talks and talks.
Now,
he has nothing to say.
Now, the thing that he's also dishonest about is that he said last week to the Des Moines Register. No, not last week. He said this last week to the Des Moines Register. He said, there's nothing dishonest about my tax plan and Medicare plan. He said Planned Parenthood Action Fund executive director said that he's being completely dishonest about it and his intention to end access to safe and legal abortion. That Mitt Romney has been crystal clear that if he's elected president, he will work to overturn Roe versus Wade. Mitt Romney
said it over and over.
Healthcare as far as outside of the mainstream, and that's why he's trying to hide them until the last week of the election.
Yeah, I mean, that's the truth of it right now. During these final weeks and in the debates, you remember the other night when he was basically parroting everything Obama stood for, but he is trying to, and they said they were going to do this. You remember that back in the fall, spring, they said, we're going to play Etch-a-Sketch in the fall because voters are too stupid to remember what we say. I mean, that was his own campaign, released that. And their whole idea is to tack to the middle, pretend to be a centrist, try to get enough votes away from Obama that they can get elected. Because he was so extreme on the other end. You know, he was out there, you remember, he was competing against people who were real extremists and saying, no, I'm the guy. Remember, he said, I'm the pro-life president.
Right.
I'm the pro-life one. You know, I'll be the one to first to ban it and sign it. That's why he's saying things like, I'll be delighted to sign that bill, you know, and I'm going to overturn it. And my agenda is, here's my pledge. I'm going to put in judges that overturn it instantly. And then he turned around and says, no, not really, you know.
Here's what else he said. He's so far getting rid of abortion. He says, there is no legislation with regard to abortion that I'm familiar with that I would become part of my agenda. One thing I would change, however, which would be done by executive order, not by legislation, and that would be to reinstate the Mexico City policy, which is that foreign aid dollars from the United States would not be used to carry out abortions in other countries.
Right.
It's been long the practice here that taxpayer dollars are not to be used to fund abortions in this country. President Obama said on the 10th day of his administration, he changed the Mexico City policy to say that abortion services will not be permitted in our foreign aid dollars. I would go back to the original so-called the Mexico City policy. Now, the thing is,
well, you remember, that was just part of this is the way they frame it also that drives me nuts. They say, abortion. Oh, we're funding abortion, blah, blah. All we funded, actually, overseas, is family planning and education.
That's right. It's not abortion.
All we do is teach people, A, you know, how the body works, why you might be getting pregnant, you know, 14 years of age, out of Serengeti. So you teach them about biology, and about proper ways to live, and about, more importantly, controlling disease. Because we've got rampant disease all over the world in poor areas that can't afford a lot of services, doctors, hospitals, everything else. You know, that, these.
What are you talking about, West Virginia?
Yeah, exactly. I thought I was actually from Mississippi. But the point is, they misconstrue all the time. I mean, the amount of quote unquote abortions that we talk about our fund worldwide is, again, minuscule in infinitude. What we do is go over there and educate people and talk about things like safe sex, the use of condoms to prevent AIDS and all that. And, you know, there are certain forces in the world, evangelical, Catholic, Republican.
Sex. What does safe sex mean?
Safe sex?
I mean, is it safe? Is it like, you know, is it safe?
It's inside a vault. Okay.
In a vault.
And it's got combination, lock, tumblers. No. But again, it's just the practice and the education of. you know, sexual matters, how to have children, why you should have maybe less children in an impoverished area. Maybe that's not a good idea to have 10 children when you can have two, things like that. And how to regulate things like that by having condoms or by using...
Just say no.
Any of that kind. Just say no. That was another...
I mean,
but
it worked with Nancy.
So this is a guy
just
that...
Just say no.
Again, we're talking about someone who is adamantly talking... This is the party of don't let that evil dictatorial Obama rule our life. And what does he say? What did Romney just say you just read? His first time, I'm not going to wait for the legislation.
Right.
I'm not going to let for the courts and all that. I will put my edict out.
Executive order.
No more sex. So say it.
I want to know. So are we actually saying that he has not had sex with Ann in 30 years? How old is his youngest child?
I'm not getting into his private life.
Why? You're trying to get into mine.
Hey.
He's trying to get into everybody else's. Why can't we get into his?
Listen, don't you know?
He wants to know. You ever see the commercial with Rachel, which I love that commercial? They want to, they said, we shouldn't have government in nothing. Government should be nothing. But yet they want to sit in your bedroom and make sure that you are dotting the I's and crossing the T's and are doing it. So
talk about
tell me, he could be the president. He wants to get in my bedroom, but I can't get into his.
Yeah.
Are you joking? I want to know. When's the last time they had sex? And did they use a condom? Did she use the morning after pill?
Which
did
planet?
She use any pill?
Which planet?
Well,
I don't know.
Where were they? Maybe if they did it in the Bahamas.
Hey.
Well, it's always better in the Bahamas. You know, but anyway, maybe if they did it in the Bahamas.
I don't know. They also have that Swiss chalet. I'm just saying.
Well, that's true. I understand.
The Alps could have.
I understand that you can't get pregnant if it's cold.
Yep, maybe that's it. Deep freeze.
Yeah, okay.
Deep freeze.
That
works.
Deep freeze always works.
But again, chestnuts roasting on an open fire. The point is, why do they always want to legislate?
I'm cutting you off, but you know, all these different positions he has, he must be some swinger. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. So, again, this is the party of no big government, get rid of evil Obama, those terrible Democrats and their oppressive, dictatorial communism invading our lives with them, right? This is that party. They're the ones who constantly want to legislate what you can do in the bedroom. They're the ones who, if you accidentally got pregnant, want to then vaginally probe you and play that porn, you know, for everybody to see to make sure you're doubly humiliated, you know. It's insane and it's bizarre. I don't know what the weird kink is, but they are obsessed with the bedroom and what you do in it.
Hey, listen.
Listen, I got to tell you this. We've just spent an entire year with 50 Shades of Grey, the number one bestseller. And they had at one time 9 of the top 10 bestsellers were all erotica. And I think now we're down to 6 of the top 10. So, what does that say about America? I don't know. 50 Shades of Intrusive. Bedroom.
You know
policies.
What Representative Ryan said. According to Ann Rand.
Carmen, can I walk in the graveyard at night?
Yeah.
Oh, is that different? I'm sorry. What is it?
Yeah. That according to the Munster Man, Ann Rand.
Their patron saint.
Patron saint.
Or at least of the Pope.
When he's behind closed doors, because that's, you know, the only time you need to talk when you're behind closed doors in quiet rooms. That's when he really comes out and talks about how wonderful Ayn Rand is, because since I'm mentioning Ayn Rand, I got to play this.
Mm-hmm.
I just had to play that. Whatever we're talking about, the Munster Man and Eddie Munster, and it's getting close to Halloween, so we had to give him a little play in it, because last night he was beat about the head and shoulders. I lied. I didn't feel sorry for him.
Speaking of a good flogging, I just have to tell you, don't let people forget, because this is, again, the Etch-a-Sketch mentality. Do you remember back during the last year when they were starting the who's going to be the Republican?
Mm-hmm.
The whole, you know, shall we return to Palinville?
Ooh.
And everybody was running around and courting people, and patron saints of Ron Paul were playing every day, you know. This is the party of family values. This is the party of we don't have sex. That's only evil Democrats.
Well,
you know, we just legislate against that immorality over here in our nuns and outfits of wait a minute. The truth is the RNC and later their congressional committee, the NRCC, both were caught last year in scandals. You remember, at their national convention, they had fundraising parties at all the strip clubs.
Works
now, they went to Vegas, not once, but twice, two different clubs. Pete Sessions was even called in there and said, unbelievably, he didn't see nudity. What was he saying?
When he went to the men's.
Well, hey, don't wide stance the issue here, Mike. I'm trying to stay on task.
Yes.
Let's focus. But the one that cracked me up was the RNC used their own party funds. Now, this is the family values crowd. And they had their young Republican donors all hosted for a weekend in a Hollywood S&M nightclub.
Ooh.
You remember that scandal when it erupted? They were in there with groups of lesbians.
I was trying to get in and take pictures, but it wasn't
bondage. Again. They were all literally swinging from the rafters. I mean, this is a whole thing going on. And they're the ones that are the family values crowd. You know, they're the ones that are the moral police of America and trying to return us to the high road. I mean, this is what they do with their donors' money. They take the money from their churches, the money from their evangelical supporters. They give their little $5 or $10 donations, and then they go out to S&M clubs and think of a new way. I mean, where do you think that idea came from for, hey, what if we had a vaginal probe and we could use it on the women and then take a video of it? Yeah, this is a good law. I mean, maybe they got some ideas.
Yeah, but wait a minute. We're talking about capitalism. Now, there's nothing wrong with capitalism.
That's true.
I mean, even the what's the Mexican drug gang? I don't know, what's the MS 2004? What's the name? That Mexican? Well, you know.
Yes.
They have now. The federal government has now sent a letter to all the banks that they no longer can handle that money.
Yeah. Well,
so.
But see, the difference
some
is.
Some capitalistic people
if you took a,
just can't make it in this life. The government's going to step in.
Well, I don't mind anybody having, you know, a wad of ones in case they accidentally found themselves in a Las Vegas strip club. It's just
right.
That. That is the freedom to choose. That's the freedom to do as you like.
Okay.
And as you just said, if a gang wants to sell drugs and shoot people in the street and all that, maybe legitimate businesses shouldn't deal with them. You know, maybe that's an okay type thing to
Well, I don't
trick,
see why
right?
would you step in against a business. A business is a business.
These people, though, are repeatedly trying to stop every person in America from having sex or having safe sex or even having education about safe sex or even, in case you had sex, having the option later of even going to a health clinic somewhere
see, that was
and getting
never,
tested.
That was never part of the Constitution. That was not part of the Bill of Rights, having sex.
But it's the hypocrisy of it. We all have sex. And apparently,
no,
they
I don't
all
think
Rodney's
had sex in 30 years.
Well,
how old is the youngest?
I don't know.
30, 35?
Well, here's the thing.
They've had 43 years, right?
Is he part of the Republican Party?
Supposedly, yes.
Yeah. Well, their parties are at strip clubs. That's what I'm saying. I mean, their parties are at S&M clubs.
Well,
so this is their own funding, their own parties. I'm just saying something ain't quite hypocritically aligning here.
Have you heard, do you know what their pro-life pledge is? They made a pro-life pledge. Mitt Romney did. He says, I am pro-life and believe that abortion should be limited to only instances of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. Except Paul Ryan says, even in that case, it shouldn't be done.
Yeah,
but he's falling in line with the Mitzvah now. Number two is I support the reversal of Roe versus Wade because it is bad law and bad medicine. Roe was misguided ruling that was the result of a small group of activist federal judges legislating from the bench. I want my own activist judges legislating from the bench.
You know, sometimes I think he writes his speeches when he's listening to the radio and old Bon Jovi tunes.
Oh, is that what, okay.
Bad medicine.
Right. He says, I support the Hyde Amendment, which broadly
Hyde.
Bars the use of federal funds for abortion. And as president, I support efforts to prohibit federal funding for any organization like Planned Parenthood, which primarily performs abortion or offers abortion-related services. Well, the Hyde Amendment right now, you can't do that. So he's talking as the vice president was kind of polite, saying stuff, malarkey. I'm saying he's talking shit. What's he talking about? He's full of it. Because right now it doesn't do it. And performs abortion or offers abortion-related services. Planned Parenthood abortion is only 3% of their services.
Right.
3%.
Right. This is what I was talking about earlier. When they're trying to – they use the abortion argument for a reason to defund any international aid program.
Absolutely.
And it's got almost nothing to do with it.
Absolutely nothing. Then he says, I will reinstate the Mexico City pledge. Well, why don't we have a U.S. pledge? What's with this Mexico City pledge? Yeah. I mean, come on. They keep talking about, he's foreign. He's talking about European. He's Obama. But yet he wants the Mexico City pledge to ensure that non-governmental organizations that receive funding from America refrain from performing or promoting abortion services as a method of family planning in their country.
Well, you have to remember, let's focus on Mexico for a second. This is a guy whose family fled the United States.
Oh.
Okay.
Chicken's coming.
Went to Mexico, grew up there for a while, and then he is Mexican. His father.
Why is he running for president? How can he run for president?
Should
we check his birth certificate?
Hey, maybe it's,
I think it was
maybe
a fraud.
It's not legitimate.
It might not be.
But
correct.
Apparently, they want his parents to be the last people to immigrate from Mexico back to America. And then they slam that door, build a wall, put guns on it, barbed wire, big spotlights. I hear spotlights are popular. And then what else? I don't know. Maybe we could put some drones flying up and down the Rio Grande. Never know.
Now, he also, as part of this Mexico City plan, he said, this includes ending American funding for any United Nations or other foreign assistance to the programs that promotes or performs abortions on women around the world.
I thought Bolton got rid of the United Nations.
You mean
that evil communist group is still around?
Yeah, you see, Bolton was an illegitimate UN ambassador.
Huh?
He was never given the full pledge of. Blah, blah. He was one of those guys that snuck in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. He said, now, I will advocate
Rice was playing piano.
That's right.
But
I will advocate for and support a pain-capable unborn child protection act to protect unborn
capable
who are capable of feeling
that's
pain
a painful title.
From abortion.
That's like the most awkwardly titled law I've ever heard proposed.
No.
The pain capable
child
protection.
How do we tell whether or not these aborted children feel pain? Don't we have to torture somebody first to find out whether or not they feel pain?
Well, you know,
how would we feel? How do we know whether or not a drug works?
We run trials. How do we know that they're feeling pain?
Let's consult Dr. Mangala.
Can we ask him?
Dr. Mangala probably did some tests just like this.
Now, Mangala would know.
Yes. Because, you know, sometimes you have to know it. It's all in the quest. But, again, these are legislating everything that they just said they were against, right? Everything that they said they don't do. They're government intrusion in your lives. They're talking about government control of everything you do in the bedroom and the product of the bedroom.
Now, here's another thing he says. And perhaps the most important, I will only support, appoint judges. Well, first of all, he doesn't get to appoint them. The judiciary has to be located. He can say who he wants.
Right.
He don't appoint anybody.
Right.
So this is another thing he has to learn when he becomes a...
But again, that's a...
If he ever became the president, which I doubt. But he said, I will only appoint judges who adhere to the Constitution and the laws as they are written, not as they want them to become. So that means that if he appoints an ultra-right conservative judge, that judge cannot write a law the way he wants it. He has to use the law that he has.
Right.
Am I misinterpreting something here? He says, as they want them to be written.
Right.
So that means...
And this is the same guy who a minute ago said that he would honor judges who respect the Constitution and follow the laws, but at the same time, he's going to appoint only people who do what he wants.
Well, but you
can't have it both ways.
But you see, he doesn't say have judges reinterpret the law. He doesn't say he wants judges to...
Well, he says he's going to replace.
No, he doesn't say replace. He says who adhere to Constitution
and
the laws as they are written.
Well, that's the...
Then he says, not as they want them to be written.
That's the...
So if they come into office, they're already written.
But look, this is that malarkey we were talking about.
Oh.
This is that problem I just said earlier. This is a guy who, in his own pledge that he published, that he was going to overturn Roe v. Wade, that he was going to end it.
Right.
In his pledge, he said, I will appoint people who overturn it. I will make it my agenda. You know, blah, 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 blah. This is my book. In that same thing, that he also had that nonsense, which is actually the truth, that judges are supposed to be above and beyond, and they're supposed to not write laws or anything like that. They simply see how they're written and view them as constitutional or not. That's their whole job. But this is a guy who's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Again, it doesn't make any sense.
And he does have.
Except.
Well, both sides, that's only two. He's got
about eight sides of his mouth. But look at this, about his pledge. One thing that he said that just drives me nuts. He's called, I mean, this is a person who, he, you know, at the same time you're saying that, oh, I won't do anything bad, I promise. It's okay, people. He said, it is the darkest moment in judicial history. Right? What was it saying? Oh, yeah. Roe v. Wade is the darkest moment in Supreme Court history. Now, if this is a person who believes that is the darkest moment in all of history, slaves, civil rights, you know, whatever. But this is the darkest moment ever, okay? If this is the darkest moment, wouldn't you do everything in your power to overturn that? I mean, that's a soul-wrenching pledge. If it's so evil, you would want to overturn that.
Okay, now I want you to hear one of the – he's considered maybe the greatest president that ever lived.
Let me warn you and let me warn the nation against the smooth evasion that says, of course we believe these things, but we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We will do all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything.
I mean, this is exactly what we're talking about here. He said, if I have the opportunity to serve as our nation's next president, I will commit to doing everything in my power to cultivate, promote, and support a culture of life. Amen, brother. I mean, this is the most egotistical. Well, you know, it's what we were talking about this before you're on the air. Glenn, Gary, Glenn, Ross. The ABCs of salesmanship. Always be closing. That's it. You are always closing. And remember, is for closes only. So it doesn't matter how you have to. I was a salesman. I know what it was as a salesman on Wall Street. I know what it is. You are always closing. You are everything out of your mind is to get at that end, to get that person with their finger, those digits on the dotted line, to sign their name. Nothing else matters. Now, I was with IDS, Investors Diversified Services, which is now American Express. We were told never to lie. We were told that. Never to lie. More liars have come out of salesmen. I did not lie. When I went out there,
sometimes an omission isn't a lie.
Well, yes, but you know what? I would sit down, go make an appointment. You know, and first of all, to get an appointment, yeah, everybody, if you haven't seen Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross, you've got to go see this film. Alec Baldwin, I mean, major stars in it. Not De Niro, Al Pacino, bunch of stars. Anyway, the Jack Lemmon. The thing about it is, me, as a salesman, you have to go at least talk to 75 or 100 people to get 10 appointments. I mean, that's what you do. Go in on Monday, bam, 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 make appointments, call, till your fingers drop off. Then you get these 10 calls and you go out and try to sell. You might sell three.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go out to these people. A lot of times they were older people. 10 years, sometimes 5 years towards retirement. And they had a nest egg, and they were trying to just get over that hump where they could take the small pittance, in some cases $10,000, that they saved up 40 years between them to save, to invest. That was all they had, and that god-awful Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
But this was going to get them over the hump, and you would sit down with them, and they would look at you and say, "Can you help us?" And I'm telling you, we were not taught to lie. I could not lie, and I want to tell you something. I made the first six months, I was the number one salesman in New York State. And I want to tell you something. I did not lie one time. I happened to get people who I didn't go there selling them the $100,000 they're going to get if they invested this $10,000. I went in there to sell them what they needed. And if I did not feel that they could make anything, I told them that. And I said, look, you're all right where you're at. And after a while, I kept saying, you know, these other guys are coming in. We go to these seminars where the guy's got the gold Cadillac. He's got the Rolex watch. And I'm saying, and the guys are telling me, he says, sell them. If they don't need it, sell them anyway.
Right.
It's not your fault. They're the ones that assigned it. But I said, no, I couldn't do that. So I had to leave that. But I remember one time, this one couple, they had $7,000, and they were about, eight years from retirement. And I said, yes, there is vehicles that you can put in, but is anything guaranteed? I said, nothing in this life is guaranteed. And they looked at me like, but the market's doing so well. How can you? I said, I can't guarantee it. There might be people who can guarantee it, but I am not one of those people. And I think the best way for you is to take this money and put it in something that you know is going to make a little bit, but it's safe.
So at least you don't lose it.
So you don't lose it. And then the next question I said, how much of this can you lose? If you lost it all tomorrow, would you be all right? Oh, no, we couldn't. I said, well, then I can't afford in good conscience having you do this. So we're sorry for you coming all the way out here and we're not getting anything. I said, this is not Macy's. This is not Gimbel's. You're not buying window shopping. I said, you are, in essence, window shopping, but I don't have to sell you.
Let's see, Mike.
And I left that because I couldn't do it. But the woman, they went and bought insurance for their grandkids because I told them that up front.
Right. But this is why you don't have Cayman Island bank account.
That's true. That's absolutely correct.
See?
This is why I don't have a Cayman Island.
See, a true capitalist would just say, you have a nest egg.
A nest egg.
I need that nest egg. Now let's transact a way for you to give it to me. And that would be the process that would then ensue.
Bain capital, you mean?
That might be the bane of your existence, but
the bane of my existence.
You know, a couple $1 million might soothe some of the guilt you feel over taking those nest eggs.
Yes, well, you know anybody that would give me a couple of $1 million for my good deeds?
I don't know anybody to give you a couple of million, but I know a couple of guys that would take all those nest eggs.
You know a couple of guys that would take those nest eggs.
They've been running hard for the highest office in the land.
Well, I wanted to before we continue on this quest here, if I could find who I was trying to get here,
I just want to bring this up, too.
Yes, go ahead.
While you're looking on your smartphone. Because I was just trolling around, looking at things. You know, earlier we were talking about what kind of crazy sex life do these people have?
You talking about the mission?
Okay, yeah. But listen, while you're sitting there, got a second. I looked this news up. So, you know, Mitt Romney got in trouble for getting caught with his 47% theory on taxpayers on tape. Well, that was, you know, good mileage at the moment, but turned out to be just the regular gaffe that he makes, you know. But the thing was, his comments were given at a fundraiser in Boca Raton, Florida, okay? And it happened to be at the estate of a hedge fund manager named Mark Leader. Later. I don't know his last name. But the point is, just talking about this in general, you know how the RNC is getting in trouble having S&M club fundraisers and all this stuff? So Romney got in trouble for making that comment at this guy's estate. And this guy's estate and this guy is famous for not only that he, you know, is some kind of rich guy, but he's famous for having what he calls soirees in the Hamptons.
Swinging soirees?
Yes, some of the most extreme and famous swinging soirees. No, they said they're the vicious acts that are just unbelievable. is that his Bridgehampton home, for instance, he rents a $500,000 a month. Okay? He has guests comfort nude in the pool, sex acts performed on tables, and scantily clad Russian women he hires in dance on platforms between them all.
Ooh.
These are the kind of parties he
throws. I was never invited.
Exactly. And said, these are the talk of the Hamptons because he spends insane amounts on these crazy parties. Now, these are the serious moral family values guys. But this is the kind of people they are. You see, there's a certain, I don't want to say lack of character, but there's a certain, I think, depth of morality that occurs when you can have anything. When you have enough money that you can snap your fingers and anything occurs, after a while, you lose kind of the sense of what's right and wrong.
That's right.
And what's good or bad.
And you have calluses on your fingers.
Yeah.
You snap them so much.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's part of the problem when we're talking about these guys who just don't get it. You know, they don't understand the plight of regular Americans, or they don't understand, like you're talking to this couple, and you can see that they don't have the money to invest in the stock market and go play some high yield risk of funds, the game or whatever. No, these are people are just normal people trying to get by. These people are not normal, and they ain't trying to get by.
They're already by.
$500,000 a month on your home, and that's not even the bill that you had for the exotic dancers on the tables and all the sex acts in the pool.
Right.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Let's see.
This is a different world we're talking about, and I think a different world is where we are diverging. We're going to have to choose 1% America or 99% America.
And right now, let's see, we got somebody in America who's calling us. Hello, who's this?
This is Randy.
Randy James.
Yes.
From Dunktown, from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Yes, Brooklyn is my home. Nice article today in Sports Illustrated on Brooklyn.
Oh, very nice.
There was. Oh, now I know, Randy, you're not actually calling in to talk about Mr. Romney.
No, that wasn't my intention, but I do have my thoughts.
What's that? You have them in your thoughts?
Yeah.
Having a little rant on him. Well, maybe it's time to take a break from that.
Well, since Randy. Now, Randy is from my hometown.
Yeah.
We're both from Brooklyn. Where did you live in? Where did you live in Brooklyn, Randy?
I lived in Bushwick, and I lived in the Marcy, and then I lived in Flatbush.
Okay. Now you know where I live. Sterling Place, Detroit, Auburn.
I know where it is.
Went to Wingate High School.
Oh,
graduate.
Okay. Okay.
Gaffney. Big Gaff.
Yep, Big George.
And Roger Brown.
Oh, yes, Roger Brown. Famous Roger Brown. You know, it's interesting. They didn't mention Roger, but they mentioned quite a few people, Billy Burwell and Fly Williams and those players from the past.
Who didn't mention the Roger?
The article. I don't think the article mentioned Roger. I thought that was a bigger mission.
You know that there's a documentary that's being created that Ted Green out of Indianapolis is, I believe he's finished with it, and it's to push Roger Brown to get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I was aware of that, and I haven't heard anything lately about his his efforts are.
You're going to be able to hear about that next week because Ted Green will be a guest on our show.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that then.
And he has have you ever seen the trailer?
Yes, I saw the trailer for the movie online.
Well, the
they're pretty close to getting this done deal. I understand Ted is told me that he's going to be seeing some more people, possibly Bob Costas next week. And have a lot of people. For those that don't know, I'm gonna put the video on my website, the AAC website, sometime this weekend. And they've had interviews with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Dr. J, Oscar Robinson. Let's see who else. I think Elvin Baylor.
Maybe Billy Cunningham.
Yeah, Billy. I don't know. I didn't see him in the trailer, but also Larry Bird. I mean, everybody is saying that he is the greatest high school basketball player that ever played, and would have been one of the greatest pro basketball players, because he did play with Indianapolis Pacers, and he made the Indianapolis Pacers who they were.
Was their first star. This is when they were in the ABA.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And even when Tony Hawkins was there with the Pittsburgh Pipers, he was Roger was the dominant man.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it because, like baseball and basketball are my two favorite sports, and I've always wondered why baseball has this illustrious history. They have their Hall of Fame, and every now and then you'll hear about their stars of the past, the groundbreakers, but you don't have it so much for basketball. And it's a shame basketball doesn't, their Hall of Fame doesn't have the same following. I mean, if a kid today knows about baseball, he knows about the heroes of the past. He's familiar with Babe Ruth and the Hank Aarons, and but not so much with basketball.
I have to disagree with you, Randy.
Hey,
who doesn't
play or follow basketball,
yeah.
I know a Dr. J or somebody every once in a while.
What I have to disagree with is that baseball, first of all, had almost 100 years following before the first black athlete got involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had it was tied up in history, and it was created here, Doubleday, but even Doubleday copied it for the cricket. But it had almost 100 years history before the first black ball player came in. Basketball did not have that long a lead time before the first black athlete came in. And when the first black athlete came in, the door, bam, slammed open, and they all rushed in because they were seemed to be a lot more athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was that I think a lot of that is a resentment. And because right now, if we're looking at baseball right now, there aren't as many blacks in baseball as there are from the Mexican and the Puerto Rico.
Almost like boxing, the Hispanic population from around the world has started to, I mean, there are more of them than there are, black athletes in baseball.
There's a lot more Japanese and Korean.
Well, do you think that might be a reflection of investment in it? Because like Japan, for instance, you got a very small island, but they have a huge baseball presence because that's has become since World War II one of their premier sports.
And why did Japan have that? Because of Walter O'Malley and the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
It also might be
that's the reason why.
That guy with cornstarch walked up off the
isn't it ironic that the new Nets basketball arena is on the very site that Walter O'Malley wanted for the old Brooklyn Dodgers.
Absolutely.
Right.
Oh, really? Right. Well, the thing was is because of that. Who was the
Robert Moses?
Robert Moses thought he was the king and didn't want O'Malley to have that site when nobody else wanted that site.
Yeah, he I think a lot of it had to do with his feeling that he wanted to move a large part of the population out to Long Island to make his Long Island Expressway
a reality.
Worthy. Yeah, a reality. And right. and O'Malley wanted it because it was near the station where people could get on the Long Island Railroad from Long Island and go directly to downtown Brooklyn without having to get out on the streets or even drive.
That's right. And mm-hmm. and it was now you can look at Moses saying, well, yeah, they wanted the suburbanites. They wanted mm-hmm. people who were migrating. They wanted those people to go out and migrate and take up Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And O'Malley says, hey, if we got a good product here, they'll take that train and come in from Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking about that, I am I'm holding in my hand now a book by Kyle McClary that Mr. George Gaffney gave me as a birthday present,
mm-hmm.
and it says Black Baseball: A History of African Americans and the National Game, and it has George Gaffney's number one hero on the front page. You know who that is?
Would that be Jackie?
No, you would think it's Barry Bonds.
Barry Bonds. Oh, you would be facetious. You. George and I have had countless disagreements on Barry Bonds. You know, I still think to this day that that Barry Bonds was just a scapegoat, and he refused to fit into that. And you know, he probably his used
head was two sizes bigger.
yeah. He had perfected the routine, but I believed, you know, and I heard this from somewhere. I can't really remember where. That as many as 60 to 70% of the players in the game at that time were using steroids. But
I didn't even want to get to that portion of it yet, because one of the things before we got to baseball, I was waiting for George, said he would be calling in. He just got out of the movies. Call me in the middle of the show to tell me I'm on my way. You know, yeah, Christmas is on the way too. But anyway, the thing is that what about Lance Armstrong?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
titles and he's 11 teammates.
Yeah, and apparently he's sitting on a seat full of needles the whole time he's riding.
Right.
So what the heck, man?
Yeah.
Over and over again.
I mean, but now, all, and everyone, 11 of his teammates testified against him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he... Somebody mad.
Now, you think he made somebody mad or what?
He didn't share the wealth.
Yeah, that's probably it. He probably went turned his back on one of his supporters and they just seemed to be coming out of the woodwork.
But that sounds like one of those cases though where the guy, you know, when we make it big, I'll remember you guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then he just number and moved on.
Yeah, it's like the old Abbott Costello routine, but remember the people you meet on the way up because of the deep people you're going to meet on the way down.
and, you know, it's surprising that if he was having so much success and these guys were his more or less teammates, why
right.
they weren't doing the same thing. I mean,
that's, right.
that's the assumption. And when I...
Now, is this Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
We were just
hi, George. I got it. Randy's argument about other people doing something. Other people were robbing banks, but people remember Jesse James. Other people were robbing banks, but people remember John Dillinger. You know, it's this, Barry Bonds is the poster boy. He took pride in being the poster boy, and I compare him to a student that sits in the class, cheats on the test. Other people are cheating. They hand in their paper, they walk out. He's the kind of guy that wants you to walk up to your desk, ask you to grade his paper, gets 100, and then ask you, would you write him a letter of recommendation to Harvard University? He just can't stay under the thing. He wants
George,
to be out in front of the group.
George, I'm going to use your classroom analogy. Say that the teacher steps out the room and 20 people cheat.
Right.
And then the teacher comes back in the room and catches one person.
Right.
Now, the one person feels that there were 19 other people cheating along with me. But
that's right.
You, as the teacher, want to make an example of me. You want to take away my awards and my trophies and put a little, you know, quotation marks around my test grade when I know there's 60% of the other baseball players, in Barry Bonds' case, were also taking some sort of performance-enhancing drugs, you know? And then the main thing is that they were probably taking it long before it was discovered. So a few people come out and they say, oh, this guy was taking drugs. Let's take away his title. Let's take away the records. I'm not sure that he doesn't have a moral leg to stand on, you know? I don't mind having to pay the speeding ticket, but if the cop caught me in the midst of 20 other cars speeding too, I don't think that you should be able to write me the ticket if you're not going to write the other 19 cars for speeding too.
Yeah, the one thing wrong with that, Randy, the law is for everyone, but it's really for the people that get caught.
So, okay, but you know that Barry Bonds has yet to spend a year in jail. I don't think he it's a lot like Roger Clemens. Most people believe that Roger Clemens took performance enhancing drugs, and all these people, Pettit and everybody else, have come out and said he took drugs. And the government was able to do everything except get a conviction. So now the only thing we can do is keep him out of Hall of Fame, because the court of public opinion has convicted him. You know,
that's true. But you know, it just, I think I mentioned this to you before, Randy. You have Barry Bonds, who, you know, was a legitimate Hall of Famer, stealing as many bases, 40 a year, and batting 320 and 315, doubles and triples, but he had warning track power. He comes back into spring training one season with his hat. He said, oh, it don't fit no more. They had to go get a hat twice the size.
Yeah, everything grows on a normal human being except your head. If you have a big head as a kid, then you have a big head as an adult. But it usually doesn't grow. But you know what I think happened with Barry?
He said that he's now hitting the ball, instead of on the warning track, he's hitting it back to the old San Francisco Stadium.
Mm.
Now, you have the guy, but you have the same batter, Barry Bonds, but he's still striking out the same amount of time.
Mm.
He's still batting for the same batting average, because now he's batting under 300, 280, 290, which is still very good. But he is now facing a pitcher who used to throw at 90 miles an hour and is now throwing the ball consistently at 99 miles an hour,
mm-hmm,
with a curveball that then just don't break the 6 inches anymore. It breaks 6.5 feet. So who's more to blame here? I mean, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds saying, I got to defensive take these drugs because this guy is going to kill me up there.
Yeah, and plus he saw the fame that Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were getting. And as far as I'm concerned, the baseball hierarchy, they sat on their hands. And after the strike, when attendance went down after the strike season, McGwire and Sammy Sosa saved baseball.
And here was Barry Bonds, and these guys weren't being persecuted. And so Barry Bonds said, well, in order to stay with them, I've got to, but he just took it a step too far. And it's almost, I don't think you should penalize just three or four stars. You should put an asterisk around that the whole 8-9 year period that athletes were suspected, baseball players were suspected of using the drugs before everybody woke up and started the testing. But the horse was already out of the barn, so to speak.
Well, George.
Well, all of these home run averages in 700s, they're going to go away forever now?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have 12, 14 players hitting 50 home runs. I mean, the people who run the game of baseball, they were so happy for the popularity of Sosa, Maguire, the attendance, the media. Everybody turned their head, and no one sat back and said, wait a minute, how could for nearly 100 years, right, since Babe Ruth, home runs generally were all of a sudden we have 10 guys in the season hitting 50 home runs.
Yeah. Or the same guys that are suddenly the size of NFL players, too.
Well, you know, the thing is now, and I talk to George about this all the time, the baseball is the most difficult sport for any individual, man, woman, child, I don't care, to play. And if you don't start playing baseball as a child, you are never going to be a professional athlete in baseball. All these other sports you can take up when you're in high school and college and become
and catch up.
And catch up. But you can't do that with baseball.
No.
You can't
Nothing is easier to pick up than basketball. As you said, I mean, Elijah Warren and different guys, they're playing soccer their whole life. They go over to basketball. 6 months, they're a decent player, and a year, they're a great player.
Exactly, exactly. They say the forward for the Oklahoma City Thunder, the power forward, the guy who plays center, he didn't start playing basketball until about his junior year in high school. And now we the African kid.
Right, right. You're right. The thing is, though, that people don't understand that, and that's why more people seem to be interested in football and basketball, because it is a lot easier to play than baseball.
Not only that, but I took a girl to the baseball game, and, you know, I was sitting there and I was just telling her things that I hadn't even thought about. I told her about the different things that strategy. There's no game where the strategy is more important than baseball. I mean, managers are making moves in the first inning that they're waiting to impact, that will impact the ninth inning. You know, if I bring in my left-hander, then they'll take out their right-handed batter, and then I'll be able to bring in my short relief man for the seventh inning. I mean, the strategy, she was just sitting there. She says, where was all this happening? I said, look at the center fielder. He moved over. He shaded himself to left field because it's a right-handed batter and all this stuff. I said, there's something going on. Baseball is, to me, it's a perfect game. There's nothing that equals baseball. But the kids don't appreciate the strategy because they're looking for speed. Everything's got to happen quick. But I'm telling you, baseball is just, there's no game that can match baseball, I don't think, in existence.
You're talking about the strategy. What about happened with the Yankees when the manager took out the $282 million man, your number two-time Hall of Famer, Mr. Alex Rodriguez, took him out in the ninth inning and brought in this aspen of a ball player as a pinch hitter for him, and what did he do? He hit a home run.
Yeah, I mean, the big news today is that the Yankees supposed to start playing about now, and he's not even starting. He's not even in. Rodriguez is not even in the starting lineup.
And then came up again in the 11th inning and hit the home run that won the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who think now? I know, George, you have always said this. This man, Rodriguez, will hit 4 home runs in the first 5 times of at bat.
And not be a clutch time. Not a clutch hitter.
I always think, I'm telling you, they did a story on, it was like a dramatization of Jackie Jensen that used to play for the Boston Red Sox, their shortstop. Mm-hmm. And the show was built around, this is back in the 50s, the show was built around the fact that the scout came to see a guy on his high school team that was hitting home runs all over the place. This guy was knocking, but the scout realized something. He followed them for like 2 weeks, and he said, this guy hits a home run at the beginning of the game with the score 0-0, and he hits a home run at the end of the game when they're losing by 20 or they're winning by, not 20, but, you know, they're down 10 runs or they're up 10 runs or something. He said he hits another home run. But when you're in a clutch situation, he said, this guy never comes through. And then he looked at this Jackie Jensen. He said he was keeping rallies alive. He was bunting men. He was doing everything when the game was tight and close to help win the game. And they ended up taking this guy onto the Boston Red Sox, and they signed him to a contract, and they dropped the other guy because he comes through in the clutch.
George, I coached basketball for 25 years, and there were kids on my team who I'd let anybody take the technical foul shot in the first quarter and the second quarter, but I could have a kid shoot 20 for 20 in the gym, and then another kid go 1 for 5, and then the fourth quarter would come along, and the other team would commit a technical, and I knew the kid who shot the high percentage in practice wasn't the kid I wanted on
right.
the foul line. I wanted the cold, the kid who had nerves of steel, and that's not necessarily the kid who hits him when there's no pressure on him. You know?
And you know that nerves of steel, Randy, is a nice way of putting it. Sometimes you got a kid who just don't give a damn.
For whatever reason, he has to have the personality which will let him react under pressure. And a lot of people can do that, and there are quite a few people who can't. And so the player who can hit the jump shot all game long, in the fourth quarter, you may not necessarily want that steady player. You may want the kid who, like you said, in some cases doesn't care.
He's not pressuring himself.
That has to do with a person's personality, you know, because
right.
there are many people who can perform great under normal circumstances, but it's a special individual who has a special personality who will allow himself to perform when the game's on the line.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's get you both. When we talk about the drugs in sports or in baseball, what about Pete Rose?
Well,
he's friends either.
Mike, here's my problem with Pete Rose and a lot of the Hall of Famers. There are certain players who, during their playing days, were really nice to the media, really had made a lot of friends amongst the sports writers. And so when it comes time for awards to be given, certain players will get the award, and certain players won't, not because of their playing skills, but the way they treated the media. I'll give you right now there's a big controversy. Well, it's not a controversy yet. Between the MVP and the American League, there's Mike Trout, who is the All-American boy playing for the Angels, and there's Cabrera, who won the Triple Crown, and he's Hispanic, barely speaks great English. But Trout is given a chance, and I think it has a lot to do with the way Trout handles himself with the media. In the same way that last year, I think Kemp for the Dodgers almost won the Triple Crown, but he lost out to Ryan Braun, and a lot of that I think goes to who Braun is as opposed to the surly person that Kemp was, and that shouldn't have anything to do with whether someone wins an award. And go ahead.
Braun was taking drugs.
Yeah, but it came out after he won the award.
And I almost assure you, had Kemp won it, there would have been a big media blitz to take the award away from him. You know.
And the other thing, Randy, the other thing about this thing that's going on this year is this. If they give it to Trout, then they'll drop one of the lines you always used to hear. If a new guy does something great and an old-timer does something great, then you usually go for the old-timer because you can always say, well, if this guy did all this in his first year, then he should be able to do it again.
Do it again, yeah.
And so, therefore, you know, in acting, if you look, if you're a new actor and you play a role sensationally and you're up against Marlon Brando, you're not going to get the award because you can do it again. Then let's see you do it again. Let's show us that this wasn't just an accident that you played this role. Can you play other roles? So you give it to the old timer. They always do that in the Academy Awards. You hardly ever give a new person that makes a great debut. That's wonderful, and you nominated them, and that's an honor. But you don't give them the Academy Award if they're going up against Meryl Streep or Jack Nicholson or somebody.
I'll show you how you even prove your point. And this happened years and years ago. One of the greatest movies I saw, was Midnight Cowboy. And Dustin Hoffman gave a tremendous performance.
Ratso
Rizzo. And they go and give the Academy Award to John Wayne for True Grit.
Yeah,
right. which I mean, he was playing himself,
right.
John Wayne,
right.
And I mean the role itself didn't have as much for a person to give as Hoffman had to
right.
give in
right.
Midnight Cowboy,
and
when they do things like that, when I see one's performance or others better, I think. Then we're putting in the human factor of how likable is this person, which I turn even will connect to Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was not humble and likable and playing to the media. He was arrogant. So let's make an example of him, even though 60% of the other major leaguers were also on drugs.
Neither was Ty Cobb.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Babe Ruth would be kicked out of baseball today before with today's media blitz and the reporters and television cameras and social media picking up every little bad thing you do. Babe Ruth would have been banned from baseball.
The whole Yankee team would have been kicked out.
Yeah, right. And Ty Cobb probably would have quit. Rather than play with Jackie Robinson, from where the things I hear about the old Georgia Peach, he would have quit rather than play with a blackie, as he called Afro Americans.
Before I let you guys go, I want to know what's the story. When's the last time you were at Dodger Town?
It's no longer the Dodger Town. I went to Vero Beach. I paid my $4,000 for the week. And I had a great time meeting Duke Snyder, my childhood idol, and Steve Garvey and Ron Say and Rick Monday and Ralph Branca. And, I mean, I just had the time of my life. I was a kid again at 48 years old. I was a kid again. But now the Dodger training camp is in Arizona. So the place is still there, and they still have runs, camps, and things, but it's not the same. But it was great. All the streets were named after the Dodger heroes: Campanella, a Koufax Drive. I just had the time of my life. I'm best $4,000 I ever spent in a week.
That included food and everything else.
Yes, including, not only did it include food, you got two uniforms, two Dodger uniforms with the number of your hero on it. You sat in the locker room with the stars. They stayed up. They signed as many balls as you wanted them to sign. You took pictures with them. It was something that I would wish for every fan to do. And it just... It was just tremendous, a tremendous week.
And I told Mikey, your house is actually unofficial baseball museum of Charlotte.
Yeah, nobody knows it, but that's okay. I'm looking forward to having him stop by one day and talking sports.
For the last couple of days, George, but the circumstances beyond my control and his control, too, we couldn't get together. But I'm definitely going to do it next week so we can talk about it on the show next week. And for both, I don't know if you heard, George, but I spoke to Ted Green, and he said he's going to try to be with us next Friday.
Yeah, you told me he's going to be on next week.
So we'll going to talk about the Raja, and for all the people who don't know who Raja is, he probably was the greatest high school basketball player in the ever was, and basketball player, and would have been one of the greatest pro basketball players there ever was. Mm-hmm. And there's a new documentary, as mentioned before, that will be coming out, and that we're trying to get Roger into the Hall of Fame. So that's good. But so I was telling Randy, George, when he got on, I'm looking at this beautiful book with your hero on the front at bat, and every time I see it, I think of you.
Well, I gave you the book because his picture was, I would have kept the book if it had been anybody else's picture on the front. I couldn't have it in my house with his picture on. But Randy's made a good case for Bonds.
Isn't that overboard?
As much as I dislike him, Randy's Bonds, not Randy. Randy made some good points for Bonds. If I don't think about it too much, I'm going. Randy's got some good points there. I have to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even people such as Steve Carlton, who was just a great left-handed pitcher, he didn't get his due because he refused to speak to the sports writer.
Yeah.
And as a, it would seem to me, as a sports writer, I'd be able to separate a person's talent from his nasty attitude. One of the things, and this is, let me make this one last point. People who of middle class values try and give their kids everything. They teach them how to act right. They send them to the right schools, and they want them to grow up a certain way. Then we look at people like Iverson and Artest, who didn't have the advantages that we or the values that we give our kids. And these people, Artest and Iverson, they make it to the NBA. But they don't act the way we want them to act. They're nasty. They hang around with hoodlums. Well, they didn't have us as parents. In Iverson's case, his mother didn't even know she was pregnant until she got to the hospital at 14 and a half. When they don't have the social upbringing that we want people to have, how can we expect them to act like our kid would act if they didn't have the training that we have? They just have the talent. They just have the athletic talent. And that's what got them to where they are. But they didn't, they're not going to throw away all the hoodlum friends that they grew up with. They're not going to turn their back on the people they were with just because they're stars now.
Listen, sometimes that background is exactly what makes them the talented star that they are.
Yeah, that aggressiveness, that intimidation that they get, but if they grow up in an environment where those things are not upheld, those things are not important, and they don't have a lawyer or a doctor for a parent to teach them the social skills that they should have when they get to that professional level, they're not going to have those things. All they have is that raw talent. You know,
right.
And that's
prime example of that for me. Now, I don't follow basketball as much, but I used to follow boxing all the time. But a fellow Brooklynite that you might know, Mike Tyson.
Yeah, exactly. That's another prime example.
Yeah, he's literally, but that gave him that raw power and aggression that he ended up dominating the entire world of boxing with.
Mm-hmm.
But he had no social skills whatsoever. I mean,
he grew up on the streets, That's what, you know? And had he had a middle-class parent who might have given him those social skills, it also might, as you point out, not have allowed him to be as aggressive and intimidating and stare down people in the ring the way he did. I think it was one of the Sphinx guys. He said he lost that fight at the beginning when they shook hands, and Tyson looked at him like he was an animal, like Tyson was an animal, and he didn't last two rounds. So
we got a call it quits here, guys, and I will be hoping to speak to you again very shortly.
Okay.
Take it easy.
All right, I'm out of here. Hope to talk to you later in the week, Mike.
All right, bye-bye. Mike. Take it easy.
All right. Bye-bye. Talk to you later, Gaff.
Okay.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
We have now with us, hello there. Yeah. Who's this?
Michael Evans, West Coast.
Mike,
how are you?
You.
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Evans calling in from the left coast. We have been talking some sports here. We had to get off that the Eddie Munster and the Mister for a little bit because it was making me gag. We had some. This gentleman, Randy James, has a fabulous place that is, it's like a Brooklyn museum for the Dodgers, and he lives here in Charlotte. Yeah. And I'm going to be going by to see his place. It doesn't live too far from me, about 4 or 5 miles.
I have a little sports
and,
break.
We're going to go up there and compare uniforms. Because I'm going to wear my Sandy Koufax jersey, in case you're still listening, Randy. I'm going to wear my Sandy Koufax jersey, which I just treasure. It's still in the plastic bag, as a matter of fact. But anyway, we have you, Mr. Evans. What did you think about the vice president's performance?
Well, I thought Biden did exceptionally well. He came out, he made extremely good points. He refuted Ryan at almost every time he spoke. He repeatedly brought up references to Ryan's voting record and how problematic that was in a number of areas. And one of the things that really struck me as a difference between the two was Biden often showed that he respected and had confidence in President Obama. And you didn't hear that at all from Ryan talking about Romney.
No, matter of fact, how many times did he mention Romney? He mentioned him very infrequently.
Yeah.
He mentioned by name. Very infrequently, because they have a major problem in how they see abortion rights, how they see the tax situation. Because you got to remember, no matter what, they had to. It wasn't hard to convince Romney to cast away all his liberal or somewhat liberal credentials, because as I don't know if you heard the beginning when I was talking about the film Glengarry Glen Ross, the big quote in that is ABC, always be selling. And as a salesman, your job is to sell, no matter what. Sell, sell, sell. So if you have to lie, you will sell. And he will lie in a microphone. So I think it's more of a real thing with Ryan. Ryan actually believes in this horrific stuff he spouted. And Romney doesn't.
Right, but even, but Ryan wasn't even true to himself last night because he's, quote, moderating that he can reach a wider audience. He's on record as being part of the right, particularly on reproductive rights issues as to what he was last night. But you make a very good point, and it goes right to one of the questions that was asked near the end of the debate, where the moderator asked, what character trait do you feel would most help you as vice president? And Ryan straight-faced said honesty. And I almost cramped up. I was laughing so hard.
Well, and here's the thing, that they kept saying, oh, right, the vice president laughed. He made a joke out of this. Well, you know what? You had to laugh to keep from crying because these people lie such. It's just
not exactly.
And then you're going to talk about that. They're talking about Mitt Romney, who's talking about the 47%. Ryan said the same thing about the 30%, and the president and the vice president brought that out. And what could he
right.
do? He looked up with his bug eyes, like, oh man, they caught me again. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yes, it really is. And, you know, the media, they do some fact-checking. Well, what's the fact-checking in quotes? Because they really try and do the sort of balanced approach to fact-checking. So they'll take something that Obama or Biden said,
right.
Which what they said was correct, but then they'll say, well, but if you put this in a different context, it would mean, you know, it's not 100% correct. A perfect example is in the first debate, Obama referred to X number of private sector jobs that had been created over a 30-month period. And even
right.
The New York Times did this. They printed a fact-check piece and said, well, yes, X number of jobs were created, private sector jobs were created in the last 30 months, but there were also, you know, public sector job losses, and that's not a true reflection of the number of jobs since, you know, January of 2009 when he took office. Well, first off, they didn't refute the fact that he made, and second, if he had introduced those other two things, it would have taken him 30 minutes to explain it. So, you know, that's not fact-checking. That's just sort of trying to create a new bias to the horse race approach to media looking at the campaign.
Well, you know, and I'm looking at a jobs creation list here, and it's just and it goes from 2000 up to the present time, and people keep forgetting that yeah, okay, the economy was a certain way in 2008, but in the first month that Obama was president, the first month, they lost over 850,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, well, what? And that's not Obama. That's Bush. I mean, the first year of the Obama administration is not the Obama administration's. It's Bush's administration. And what do people understand about this? You know, the jobs, how many jobs were created or lost during 2008? In 2008, 3.603 million jobs were lost. 3.6 million. How many jobs were lost at the end of 2009? The same thing. This is still the Bush administration. 5.06 million jobs were lost. Again, that's almost 8 million jobs. Now, the first time was 2010. In 2010, so that's the first year of the Obama administration, 1.027 million jobs were created. And there has never been a deficit under his administration since he was in power. What are we talking about? 1.2 million in 2010, 1.8 million in 2011, and so far, up to this September, it's 1.3 million. So, what are these talking about? It is just unbelievable lies. And now they want that fool out there in your woods, General Issa, wants to have an investigation
of the Labor Department
in the Bureau of Statistics? I mean, is this? I mean, how much money did they spend on the investigation of the Attorney General? I mean, they had to spend a couple million dollars. Down the tube. And now he wants to spend more money on the Bureau of Labor Statistics? I mean, well,
that's the way they operate. You got to.
Michael?
Yeah, well, by spending their money there, they didn't have to spend it on programs for the middle class and the poor.
Well, they're saying that they have programs, but the Obama administration is preventing them from bringing it up.
Well, yeah. That's a good point. They could do a better selling job.
You think that's all they need to do is have a better selling job? I mean, it's the Senate keeps blocking all the programs that we want. Eddie Munster keeps saying that. The Senate keeps blocking all the things that we want. Well, half, a lot of their people don't want the jobs they want, don't want the programs they want. So I just don't understand the finagling here.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And of course, you know, they're saying that, well, they'll work across the aisle. Well, how exactly is that going to happen? You know, they've been obstructionist for 4 years now. No president in recent memory has worked harder to work with the other side than Obama did his first 2 years in office. And you know, Romney has done nothing to ingratiate himself to Democrats to this point. So I think it's just laughable that they're going to have some sort of bipartisan effort.
And well, I think Tip O'Neill was the last bipartisan effort that was in Washington.
Well,
the entirety of the Clinton administration, not to dim the dark light that the last 4 years have been for just blocking the way Congress works, but the entire Clinton years after the Gingrich Revolution were endless investigations, you know, blocking of everything that Clinton was trying to do on his agenda. And you got to remember, they're the ones that they endlessly smeared and investigated until finally, you know, 6 years later, they got him on something. But these are people who spent, what, something like 200 hours in congressional hearings and investigating Clinton's Christmas card writing, remember?
Yes.
Hillary Clinton, did she misuse stamps? You know, I mean, it seems laughable, but it's taxpayer dollars, and it's stopping government from working while they do all of these games in the hopes that they smear, you know, the Democrats somehow. And it was smearing Clinton then, now it's smearing Obama now. It's just, it's the same game, though. They've learned this game that if they can bring everything to a screeching halt, then they can blame the Democrats for bringing it to a screeching halt.
Well, yeah, and Paul Ryan is saying that inner-city people need to be taught good discipline and good character because they don't have it.
Is that a euphemism now?
No. He says, a very specific delineation from other city folk. Obviously, if you shoot someone to death, there's a good chance you have a major character flaw or two. But what about all the inner city people who are dying? Did they just lack character or discipline to dodge a bullet?
What are we even talking about? I mean, do they need to pull up their pants? I mean, what argument is that? I'm inner city people. What the hell does that mean?
How do you think it's going to? What do you think the president has to do on Tuesday, Michael?
There's a couple of things he needs to do to improve. First off, he needs to come out forceful. And maybe aggressive is too strong of a term, but he definitely needs to come out forceful. And secondarily, he needs to really focus on the message items that he's addressing. One of the best analyses I heard of the first debate was they said Romney showed up to a debate, but Obama showed up to a seminar. And then there's a certain amount of truth to that. I mean, Obama's answers, while good and on point, were rather wonkish. And that's not what you need when you've only got 90 minutes to address, 60 or 70 million people. And the other thing is, he has to call out Romney every single time he tells a lie. That's absolutely critical. I mean, it needs to be clear after this debate, after this next debate, that Romney is a liar and a flip-flopper. And the only way that's going to happen is if Obama brings it forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. I understand the concept of taking the high road and not, you don't want to be the nag and the person whining and that kind of idea. I understand that. But Obama really does need to use a Biden term, call malarkey when it's presented.
Okay, but right. He does not agree with you. But see, here's the problem. This is going to be a town hall type debate, and you can't be interrupting the citizens out there who are going to be asking questions. You can't do it the same way. You need to have you can't have as much fire in your belly as Joe Biden had. You might have the fire in your belly, but you can't let it out of your mouth.
Right.
Is as strong as Joe Biden.
Not one moderator.
Well, you're right, but this works to Obama's advantage because it means Romney can't do those things that he did in the previous debate where he was interrupting him and sort of talking down to him. That will be much more difficult to do in a town hall type debate. And the other thing is that you actually have to relate to who you're talking to in that type of format. Obviously, yeah. Nobody was better than that at that than Bill Clinton. But
right.
I think Obama's pretty effective at it, too. And remember how clunky John McCain was with it. I mean, he was absolutely horrible in the town hall format. And I suspect it's not what Romney really prefers either.
Right. I would think that Romney, if you have to characterize him as something, is out of touch would be a good thing to say.
Now, that's something else I want to talk to you about, Michael. We have an election coming that's going on here in North Carolina in the 8th Congressional District. And it's with the Democrat,
yeah, Kissel,
Larry Kissel, against Wacomole, whoever his name is. I don't know who it is. But Larry Kissel has really, really rubbed the people in the 8th District the wrong way, especially African Americans. I mean, this is a man who stood up and said that he did not show up at the Democratic convention. I mean, he is someone that has went against the four biggest projects, bills that the president won and voted against all of them. And when I think the last straw for most of the African Americans in the 8th District, when he refused to support the standard bearer of our party. And then on top of it, not go to the convention. Well, I guess if you're not supporting the standard bearer from your party, you shouldn't be at the convention.
Yeah, you better not show up at the party.
Right. But the thing is, though, there are some people like June Mabry, the 8th District, who is the 8th District chair, who really, I think, has gone off the deep end as far as people who are who she's in charge of in the 8th District. There's 10, 12 counties now, I believe, in the 8th District, and telling people that they cannot support the riding candidate, who is the former mayor of Richmond, Antonio Blue, who will be on the air in just a minute. And Antonio Blue was certified by the Democratic Party to be a write-in candidate. Now, I don't understand. Can you explain that to me? How can someone who's
certified by the Democratic Party, have an elected official in the party tell other people in the party that they can't vote for that person.
Like, that doesn't sound right.
That's an understatement. It doesn't sound right. I mean, when you know, I can understand if the person wasn't certified by the Democratic Party, that's the state Democratic Party, the DNC, to be the writing candidate. I can understand that if the elected officials in North Carolina said, no, you're not supposed to support that person. You need to support the person that they're
offering. There'd be some unknown independent.
But when they're certified, how can you be forced to pick one over the other? Have you ever heard of such a thing?
It sounds highly unusual to me.
Well, right now we have on the phone Mayor Antonio Blue. Are you there?
I'm here, Mike.
You know Michael Evans, used to be the chair of Mecklenburg County?
No, I don't.
We're meeting for the first time.
Oh, okay. Well, Michael Evans is now the chair of the Fresno Democratic Party in Fresno, California, out on the left
coast.
I was just, I don't know if you heard about what I just said. Do I have those facts correct?
No. Let me set the record straight, okay, Michael? And it's so good to be on the air with you guys. We filed our paperwork with the State Board of Election, and the State Board of Election, you know, they set the requirements by law, you know, what constitutes a write-in candidate, why they put the write-in blank on the ballot. And we satisfy the requirements according to the state of North Carolina and the FCC. Okay, so we are certified according to the State Board of Election and the FCC, and I am a bona fide Democrat because I used to be the chair of the Richmond County Democratic Party.
That's correct.
And I am still the mayor of Dobbin Heights, North Carolina. And so the thing of it is that what they're trying to say is based on the plan of organization, that the plan of organization says that you must support the Democratic candidate that wins the primary, you know, okay? And one of my arguments with Mr. and my memory's right, Wilson, up at the State Democratic Party was that you're telling me that I'm going against the party ticket, which Larry Kissel is the Democratic nominee for the May primary. I said, but the Democratic Party ticket is going against the head of the party.
Mm-hmm.
He's going against the head of the whole ticket. So if he can say publicly that he's not going to endorse the president of the United States for reelection, clearly I do know what the word endorse means. When he said he's not going to endorse him, that means he's not going to vote for him. He's not going to support him. So if he cannot support the president, surely other Democrats can make a decision not to support him but still support a Democrat.
Absolutely correct. Okay, so, all right, then I stand corrected that the DNC is not the one to endorse you.
If we were wrong, here's the other part. If we were wrong, at some point, I would just like to believe that the DNC would step in and say, wait a minute, guys,
yes.
You guys are wrong, back up.
That's correct. But if they did that, they would have to say that Larry Kissel was wrong.
That's, well, in a sense, but the DNC, you know, kind of have the authority to step in and say, you guys are wrong, we don't support what you're doing. Nobody stepped in and said we're wrong. We don't support what you're doing.
Okay. Has the chair of the State Democratic Party told you that you were wrong?
He hadn't contacted Michael. I mean, David Parker has not contacted me, Michael.
Okay.
He's not contacted me. But what they're doing is they're using strong-arm tactics to try to intimidate or scare voters not to support me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what tactics are we talking about?
Well, you know, when DNC came, you know, they wouldn't give tickets to people that were supporting me. You know, and, you know, June Mabry, and kind of what you said, Michael, June Mabry has done some things that's just inappropriate. And that's what I'm going to say for right now. She's done some things that's inappropriate because there's some other things in the work. But she's done some things inappropriate. You know,
well,
how do you tell a person that their constitutional right, you can take it away from them? This is not 1950 or 1940. This is 2012.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is that I have a petition in front of me that was drawn up, and according to this petition, which now I understand that there's six signatures on it, and I understand two or three have already withdrawn
their signatures
from it because they were misled in what this petition said. And
you're using the word, Michael, you're using the word misled, and I just happen to be looking at the same document you're looking at. They weren't misled. Uh-huh. They used, and I'll use the word strong-arm tactics, or they were bullied into doing what they got them to do. And the thing about it is that it is wrong, it is not right, and we're committed to winning this election on November the 6th, and our commitment stands, and we are getting undying support to support us in what we're doing.
Well, the thing is, though, the Democratic Party, this is what we are. We are the Democratic Party. And as a Democratic Party, yes, we pledge to support the person in the party that's running, but we don't pledge to support that person if that person is not in our own self-interest. Because after all, that person is running in our district. And if we don't
like the
person that's running in our district, why are we forced to support that person? Now, the individual person, every ordinary person that's in the 8th District, Barris County, you know, it doesn't matter where it's at, Anson County, that these people can vote for whoever they are because it's a democracy. Now, there's a difference between a democracy, what they're trying to say here, a difference between the democracy of the ordinary citizen and the democracy where elected officials live in. This is what they're trying to say, that if the elected officials are in a certain district, they have to support that elected official. Again, I say, it's not a democracy if you are forced to vote for that elected official. It's no longer a democracy. And
right.
So are now telling us that the Democratic Party in North Carolina, the plan of organization, is not a democracy?
Right. I understand what you're saying.
So now, if that person who's the elected official who's supposed to be representing the citizens of the 8th Congressional District can't support the president of the United States, who is the standard bearer of the Democratic Party, why are the elected officials from that district or in other districts forced to go along with supporting that candidate?
That's the question I have. What? Why are they forced to go along with someone who won't support the standard bearer of the party?
Right.
So, I mean, what's your, am I saying anything? Does it make sense?
It doesn't make sense what they're doing. It doesn't make sense at all. But again, these tactics have been used in other things before. When people go against what someone wants them to go against, when they're going against it because they're right, even in the past, in other situations, people have tried these type tactics. So this is nothing new. It's just that they are trying something and hoping that they can intimidate or scare or strong-arm people into doing what they want.
I think it's a real shame that you've got a situation where, as we say, democracy in action here, but you've got a situation where you've got a rogue member of a party who's voted against the leader of the party, against everything the party stands for, against the acts and bills that the leader of the party have passed, and has even gone so far as to not just vote against them, but then to try to repeal them also. So it's a definite, it's not a one-time thing. It's not a, you know, this is like a good trend, you can say. And you've got someone that's rogue, okay? Now, I don't understand why you're not allowed to choose someone else or vote for someone else. Why are you then forced to support this person?
Well, Michael,
who does
the
party?
Go ahead.
But this is Thomas. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what I was saying was, you know, Congressman Kissel strategically planned and made his announcement 19 weeks out. Because if you remember a couple of years ago, Michael, there was a young man that worked in his office that got secured enough signatures, and his name was placed on the ballot. You remember that?
Yeah.
And in some kind of way they got to him, and he backed away. So he knew that there was a possibility if he gave us enough time and he made the announcement, the name could have been on the ballot. So he didn't take that chance. But he forgot the one piece that he overlooked, which was the write-in candidate. See, he
right.
overlooked that part. That's why if he hadn't, he would have waited about 3 weeks later and made the announcement instead of making it at 19 weeks out.
Right.
So, see,
right.
Then the deadline would have passed already, and we would not have had an option.
You wouldn't have even had that option.
Well,
that's,
you know,
exactly
now, I'm reading the plan of organization for the North Carolina Democratic Party, and it clearly states 10.01, grounds for removal, because this petition is for, it's against Grace Galloway, who is the chair of the Cabarrus County Democratic Party. They are putting this petition in to remove her as the chair because she will not support Larry Kissel. The thing is, what it says, grounds for removal, any officer or committee member of the Democratic Party at any level, including precinct, county, congressional district, prosecutorial district, state senatorial district, state house representative, state executive committee, state executive council, or any combination subcommittee, count or council thereof, directly or indirectly give support to the aides or helps an opposing political party or candidate of any opposing party or who refuses to fail to perform his or her duties or who is convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude will be removed from office. Now, the key words here is opposing political party. You
right.
are not opposing political party.
Right.
That's right.
And you are not a candidate of an opposing party. So what ground does the person who wrote this up have we're trying to get rid of
Grace.
Or remove Grace Galloway as Cabarrus County chair. Because she wants to support you. Antonio.
And I understand clearly what you're saying, Michael. I mean, what you're saying is the same thing that I stated earlier.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, I stated this to some people at the state board, state Democratic Party, and my sentiments are the same, you know, but they're thinking that they're above the law. And ultimately, in the end, it's going to backfire against them. And it's already, and they're already starting to see the snowball effect.
Well, according to this, she says that by Mrs. Galloway helping you against the official Democratic nominee, Congressman Larry Kissel, it takes away votes from Kissel, therefore helps the Republican Richard, whatever his name is. But you see, if there wasn't for writing candidates, why would they have that? A write-in candidate,
right,
just as good. And that's why you were certified by the election board. Is that correct?
Because if I were not, then it wouldn't matter what they wrote in, because they wouldn't even count those votes.
That's correct. So they will be counting your votes because you
that's
have
right.
been officially certified by the state.
By the state board of elections. That's right.
So now, is the state board of elections part of the conspiracy also?
No.
Okay.
No.
So therefore, and we could go about this round and round and round. The problem is that myself, I used to be the first vice chair of the 8th congressional district.
Right.
And
right, Michael.
District, okay, it was a major, major problem with Larry Kissel not even trying to do what people in the district wanted him to do as our candidate. And so Larry Kissel, I feel, by not even giving a valid explanation, he wouldn't even talk to the board. We had to force him to talk to his own board in the 8th District at one point. So, you know, it's bringing up this bogus claim that now that I'm not involved in this anymore because I have been redistricted out. I'm no longer in the 8th District. But the problem is, if I was there, it would have been a lot more problems for Larry Kissel. So he ought to thank God I wasn't there. But the problem is that you cannot go in and talk that you are not going to help the President of the United States, your standard bearer, but yet you want people to help you against someone else who is for the President of the United States. It makes no sense. Well, I want to where are you at now? Where can people write in if you need help? Well, I know you do. How can they get a hold of you, Mr. Mayor?
Well, they can. You can. We'll take donations. We need people to make phone calls. We need people to help us go door to door. You know, we need foot soldiers. We need all sorts of help. Now, you can email us at writingatantonioblue@yahoo.com, or you can go to our website, which is www.antonioblueforcongress. That's our website. So you can go to our website, or
is your phone number?
Yes, you can call us at 910-206-0475. Okay, Or and, if you want to mail us, and if you want to mail us a donation, you can mail us a donation to Post Office Box 705 Hamlet, North Carolina, 28345 is the zip code.
Okay.
And I mean, if there's a program or something that we need to be at, please don't hesitate to let us know. And if you email us at writingantonioblue@yahoo.com and put a phone number or point of contact, we'll get back in touch with you and we'll come, you know, to a fish fry, barbecue. It doesn't matter. We will show up.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you and good luck to you, Antonio. Things will be moving quite. We already got, what, another 21 days or 20 days left?
Yeah. Yeah, another 20-something days.
Okay.
Hey, we need more true blue Democrats and not blue dogs.
That's right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and you know, Michael, one thing that people have got to realize is that there are consequences and repercussions for your actions. Now, and just think about what I'm going to say, and both of you all know this, and maybe people listening don't know this, that if we were the Republican Party and a member of our party in the congressional on the congressional side had done what Larry Trussell has done and made the same announcement, there would have been some consequences and repercussions for his action.
You think?
But I know that there would have been. That you and you know that too. That's one
Absolutely.
Thing about them. So therefore, we need to be the same way, because there's no point in us having a person who says they are a Democrat, but in the reality they're a moderate Republican, that's walking around saying that they're a Democrat, but they don't support Democratic ideas and Democratic ways. You know, they're number three in both Carolinas, North and South. There are three U.S. congressmen, and all three are Democrat, that get support from the NRA, okay? And that is Congressman Larry Kissel, Heath Shuler, and Mike McIntyre. They all are endorsed by the NRA. Now, we know that the NRA endorsed Republican candidates mm-hmm. and people with Republican ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got three Democratic congressmen that are endorsed by the NRA. And we need to show Congressman Kissel. We need to show Congressman Kissel, Heath Shuler, Mike McIntyre. And listen, there are consequences and repercussions for your actions. And on November the 6th, we plan to send Congressman Kissel back to Bisco, North Carolina, and maybe he can go in the classroom and really understand what history is all about, supposedly the subject that he taught. Because we need to send a true blue Democrat into Washington to support the 8th District and support the President of the United States,
Absolutely.
Who is a Democrat.
And this might be one of the first times a history teacher will be teaching his own history.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Michael.
Okay. I want to thank you for being with us, Antonio, Mr. Mayor. And let's see where we're at next week. I'd like you to come back and tell us what's going on.
Okay, Michael. Thank you very much. And you all have a wonderful evening and have a blessed day.
You too. That was Mayor Antonio Blue from Richmond. He was the chair of the Richmond County Democratic Party. And
but you know,
yes.
Speaking of this, we need to just to jump off of Mr. Blue himself, but this thing with Grace really bothers me.
Oh.
And we need to help protect people like Grace because it is outrageous.
Well, it's outrageous where you could be served. And I was wrong when I said it was certified by DNC. It wasn't. It was certified by – I know it was certified by somebody.
The state.
It was,
I mean, he's
the board by the state. Yeah. I mean, we're in the same state. They certify the candidates.
Yeah.
Now, if they certify – and they are a Democratic board. So
yeah.
They certified that this candidate's
well,
writings could be done. And as the mayor said, that if the DNC had a problem with it,
they
could have been taken care of. And, this is a certified legal candidate running for office. Now, whether or not he's any candidate, that might possibly be some kind of an issue. However, he's a Democrat. And the thing that really bothers me about this strong arm tactic that they're using here, trying to get rid of Grace. And like you said, they're using grounds for removal.
Right.
A Which rule work. That doesn't even apply
it
to
doesn't
her
even apply.
Or the situation.
That's right.
So,
well,
again,
it's,
we have
it's
somebody
because
that
they think people don't read again.
Again. Don't pay attention. And they throw some legalese out
it's
there.
It's the old Republican mantra.
Right.
And now, what I understand is that two of the people have backed out of this already because they were told that it came from the state, this petition for removal. It did not come from the state. Let me make that perfectly clear. The state had nothing to do with this petition. This was made up by some people in the 8th District because they did not like Mayor Blue as the write-in candidate.
Well, they're just trying to quash this whole thing and,
yes,
and make it go away. But you know what? You know
it
what
ain't going away.
It's the same thing as Kissel's record, you know?
That ain't going away either.
I'll tell you what else ain't going away. The Bill of Rights.
Well,
and why I said that is because I was just looking on this Kissel site, looking at things he's voted for and voted against.
Oh.
Okay. Now, beyond all the I hate America, I can't stand our president, and I want to become a Republican stance that he usually has, one of the things that blew my mind, I mean, I knew that he did all the same stuff that Republicans always do, like supported NRA stuff. He voted to lessen the EPA. He voted to extend the Patriot Act. And, you know, I know he's like that kind of guy. But this one blew my mind. He was one of the few people in the Congress that voted with the Republicans for the NDAA, which was that freaking bill that they proposed to do away with the Bill of Rights. Now, this is mind-blowing.
He's a history teacher. Well, run that by me
again. You know, again, one of these dang things that they come up with every once in a while. But you know, he's the kind of guy that just makes your skin crawl a little bit. He's for the Patriot Act. Extending it. He wanted it far more than
right.
even we had. He's for, he also said that Obama didn't do the right thing. He's the one who voted to send troops and start a war in Libya. He voted for that at HJ Resolution 68. You know, he's that kind of guy, right? Oh, let's go. He voted to, you know, extend the Keystone Pipeline. Said Obama was holding up oil deliveries through the middle of America.
The breadbasket of America.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't understand these people. I mean, he voted for CISPA, that government online spying thing that they want to do in the internet, right?
You mean
he's one of the only
like
people
person of interest
that does that? Yeah. I mean, and then on top of it all, this NDAA. I mean, just go look it up sometime. I don't have time to even get into it here. But a bill to get rid of the Bill of Rights. I'm astounded. By the Republicans.
Bill, now, how does this thing work? Because I didn't see the whole thing, but I remember reading.
I don't want to stay in Kissel's dungeon anymore. I just was pointing it out. It makes me mental that these people stay in office when they don't do anything. I mean, the only thing he's done that can even remotely be claimed is he ran under a Democratic banner, but he hasn't done anything Democratic.
Well, no, you know, he did, because I was one of the first people to help him run for office here in Mecklenburg County.
Because we're broadcasting out of Mecklenburg County, Charlotte, North Carolina, the hub of North Carolina.
But anyway, it's the great state of Mecklenburg for all you people that are listening in. But, you know, let's leave Larry Kissel for a minute.
Yeah, I know. It's dark and dingy down here. I'm getting scared. Roaches are crawling on me. Please, can you leave the dungeon?
How about this guy who CEO, have you heard about him? Who wrote a letter to his 7,000 employees stating that we're doing just fine. We've come out of the recession.
We're making more money now than we've ever made. But if Barack Obama is reelected, I'm going to have to lay off half you. Half you know who that is?
No.
David Siegel, who owns the largest resort, timeshare resort in America, Westgate. He's the one who's building the 90,000 square foot house.
Ah.
That has a baseball court on it, tennis courts, 20 car garage.
With elevators?
Two, 20 cars. You think it's in an A line straight out? No. Two lane bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, you can go online. Just look up davidsiegel.com and you'll see a walkthrough of the house with his wife, who's some 30 years younger than him. And she's showing someone the house. And the woman thought, they're up on the second floor or something, the third floor, whatever it is. And she said, is this the living room you were telling me about? She said, oh, no, that's my closet.
Hey.
And
that sounds like a house that you could maybe.
It's bigger than Mitt Romney's.
Well, yeah, but it sounds like a
house.
It's
90,000 square feet, bigger than the White House.
I bet they could have some parties there. They might could invite.
But they could have parties, and most people wouldn't know they were going on.
Hey. Well, unless you had a couple of dancers on tables. And
okay. So now we're talking about back to the
Hamptons.
The pushing chain to Hamptons again. Well, that's not
hey.
True.
But, you know, with a house that size, you could throw some fundraisers like you wouldn't believe, man.
But you just need one fundraiser.
Yeah.
You could collect enough money for the whole year. One fundraiser.
Hey, maybe it's like $10,000 you get to drive a car.
He says that he cannot afford to live. Oh, that's what his wife said. She doesn't know what she's going to do if they have to sell
the
90,000 square foot house.
Oh, poor thing.
She says the kids and I will not know what to do.
They might have to stop using walkie-talkies to talk to each other. I don't know.
No, they use walkie-talkies are not strong enough. They have to use cell phones. They have their own
cell phone
power.
In the house. Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is, you need to look at it. You remember?
You know, if Obama stays in office,
they
might have to shrink that down to 80, 75,000 even.
Right. Remember the movie Citizen Kane?
Mm-hmm.
When it shows you the palatial establishment where he brought animals from all over the world there. Well, this makes that look like a pauper. Now he does it, and so his last statement was to the people that if Obama gets in, you'll be reading about me when I'm laying on a white beach in Bermuda, retired.
Yeah.
And out of the business.
And
then nobody will have a job. He says, I am a job creator.
I guess he hires construction workers to build 90,000 square foot homes. That is a job creator.
He didn't do it on his own.
But
anyway, we're getting down to the last couple of minutes here. And I wanted to play this. And as a matter of fact, we'll go out with it because I don't think we're going to have enough time. But
all right,
let's just go out with this. And I want to tell everybody, have a great weekend. This has been The Last Word, Michael Lawson and Thomas Fortenberry. Hey, hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
And that was a tribute to the Mitster, because no one knows what evil lurks in the heart of the Mitster. Only the shadow knows.
No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it, diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing. You don't look satisfied.
One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only three categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?